On Tech News Today, Spotify adds Tech News Today, both the audio and the video versions. Oh, and they announced some other stuff, too. Plus, Google lets you share links across your home or office without networks, the internet, or even SneakerNet. And we'll tell you about a new Android web browser that can't show advertising. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one simple integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, your host, and our co-anchor today is Refinery29 tech editor Christina Bonnington. Welcome to you, Christina.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, this show is a little bit longer than your show, the Gingercast. That's a pretty short news show. Can you tell us about the Gingercast?
Yeah, the Gingercast is a six-second Vinecast that my former coworker, Roberto Baldwin, and I put on kind of irregularly right now, but we sum up the day's most important tech news in 6 seconds, and every piece of news is preceded by "This is the Gingercast," and then finished by "That was the Gingercast." So we basically say the news in about 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's—I was going to say—that's 3 seconds right there. So, do you have to be a redhead to watch it, or can anybody watch it?
Anyone can watch it, but you do have to be a redhead to be on the Gingercast. But it's okay if you're not a natural redhead. We've got two red wigs that guests can wear.
Great. We'll send Chad over there right away. So now tell me, what is the URL for the Gingercast? If somebody wants to watch this show, how do they find it and follow you?
Let's see. So you can watch it on Vine, vine.com/gingercast. We're also on Twitter, just at Gingercast. And then we also have a Tumblr, I think gingercast.tumblr.com. But it's been a while since we used that one. So, okay. Yeah, so mostly Vine and Twitter.
That'll do it. And it's already an extremely popular Vine. So, fun stuff. I really enjoyed, I went through a bunch of them this morning. It's really a lot of fun. Well, let's jump into the news. Spotify today announced the addition of video content and podcasts to their streaming music service. Full disclosure, Twit is one of the initial rollout partners for the launch. So you'll be able to watch and listen to this show and all Twit shows on Spotify. Lucas Shaw is an entertainment reporter for Bloomberg and joins us now to talk about this pretty late breaking news. Welcome to you, Lucas.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Now, what kind of videos will Spotify offer? Is it just professionally produced videos, or will users be able to upload videos like they can on YouTube?
At the moment, it looks like professionally produced videos. Their initial partners are companies like Vice News, Tastemade, which is an online food network, Comedy Central. They had the two creators of Broad City, which is a popular series there on stage to talk about the partnership. NBC, ABC, lots of professional video players.
Gotcha. And does this cost anything extra over your normal Spotify subscription costs?
At the moment, it doesn't look so. It looks like it will. I think it'll be factored into your free ad-supported Spotify. One of the big reasons Spotify wants to do this is because they can charge more for video ads than they can for ads in played during music or in podcasts. And then if you pay $9.99 for Spotify, you'll just get videos a part of that. I think they'd run into some trouble if they tried to raise the prices, because then they'd all of a sudden be more expensive than some of their competitors.
Now, what's the competitive landscape like right now? It's all moving and changing so quickly, it's difficult to get a handle on it. I mean, of course, YouTube has user-generated videos, but they also have lots of content and they have lots of music videos. So that's a competitor. Apple's coming out with its service. Everybody's jumping into this space, it seems, not only the video space, but also the music streaming space. Who do you think Spotify's, of course, Spotify's the leader in streaming music, but who is their big competition in this sort of new world of video and audio streaming?
Yeah, I think it's Apple and Google. Apple doesn't have a real streaming music play yet, but they're about to show it off. And if there's anyone who's going to convince people to pay for music, it's probably Apple, given the success that they've had with iTunes. And then on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you have YouTube, which is the dominant player in free ad-supported video and music. You know, people forget sometimes that music is the single most popular genre on YouTube, and they also are working on a subscription product, and they're two companies that have the money to compete with Spotify, which isn't making any money of its own yet.
Gotcha. And do you think this is finally going to help Spotify to be a profitable company?
Certainly could. If they get advertisers to buy in and this helps them grow their subscriber base to say, 30 million, 40 million, it could help them be profitable. The challenge for them is still going to be how much they're paying out, because one of the reasons why they're not profitable yet is because they give 70% of their revenue back to the record labels. And then for this video content, based on what I'm hearing, they're paying for that too. So they need to bring in more than they're already paying out. They haven't been able to do that with music so far. There's a better chance of them doing it with video, provided that they get scale.
Now, of course, we reported earlier this week that Spotify made a deal with Starbucks where, pretty much the baristas are going to be in charge of the music and they're going to create their own playlists. And then customers can go in there and suggest things. And so there's going to be this interaction between the baristas and the customers, essentially fighting for control over the music. Now, you may not be able to answer this because it may not be knowable, but will I be able to go into Starbucks and request a podcast?
I don't know the answer to that. Based on what I've seen, you will be able to access whatever is playing. You can then, find that playlist. I don't know that you'll be able to ask them, but my guess is that it'll depend Starbucks to Starbucks. You have a good relationship with the barista who's the resident DJ, and he or she will play whatever you want.
And then Spotify also added another feature. Say if you're running to get your coffee in the morning, Spotify can now play music that matches like the pace that you're running.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'll depend on whether people want to opt into it. I'd assume that Spotify has to let people approve it monitoring their movement. I, for one, will not be doing that. I don't need Spotify to know what my, what my heart rate is or whether I'm running or walking. But at the same time, Spotify gets this shiny announcement that it's made a deal with Nike, and it's aware that a lot of people listen to music or podcasts or anything else while they're running, and they need to offer something to satisfy some people. You know, when you're a subscription player, the key is coming up with a lot of different offerings that convince people to pay for you. And so if this running thing gets another million or two people to sign up for Spotify, it works out for them.
I totally need the running thing because I always need music to get me up hills and stuff when I'm trail running. And almost every time I'm about to hit the Widowmaker, the big hill on the trail that I run, and all of a sudden it's some like slow, sleepy ballad or something like that. And I'm like, come on, I literally stop and change the music. And if they can just match my heart rate, that'd be a big help. So we'll see if anybody else agrees with that. All right. Well, Lucas Shaw can be found at Bloomberg.com and on Twitter at Lucas_Shaw. Thank you for joining us today, Lucas.
Yeah, thank you both.
Well, if you are a mobile app developer and you need to take payments, you have to check out Braintree, our sponsor today. Braintree is a payment solution that is used by some of your favorite companies. Companies like Uber, Airbnb, Hotel Tonight, Living Social, and Muntree, and a whole bunch more. And what do these companies all have in common? First of all and foremost, they have super easy payment solutions because they use Braintree. And the second thing is that they started out as very tiny companies pretty recently and grew really fast. And they all implemented Braintree when they were tiny, and Braintree grew with them into the big companies that they are today. And especially Uber, which is a gigantic company that just processes enormous numbers of payments, of course, and it's super easy. It's so easy that once you enter in your information and use Uber, you pretty much are done even thinking about payments other than the information you get back telling you how much you paid for your ride. It's so easy to do. And one reason it's easy is because Braintree will enable you to accept huge numbers of payment plans like Apple Pay, PayPal, American Express, MasterCard, Discover, even Diners Club, and a bunch more. And they have excellent customer service and very, very simple integration. And you can solve the problem of mobile card abandonment because it's so easy. Mobile card abandonment is when somebody wants to give you money, and then the payment system, which you will find on lots of websites, are so complicated that people give up and go away. Well, Braintree is here to solve that problem for you. They'll make it so easy to do the money transfer that people who want to give you money will successfully do so. Braintree gives you full stack payment solution, support for all payment types for your customers might want. You can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, credit cards, and a lot more with a single integration across all platforms. They also have superior fraud protection, superior customer service, and super fast payouts. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/TNT. Google released today an experimental Chrome extension that sends links to the miracle of sound. It's called Google Tone. The Verge news editor Kwame Opem wrote about Google Tone and joins us now. How are you doing, Kwame?
Glad to be here.
Now, this sounds really cool to me. It reminds me of an app called Chirp that's been around for a little while, but this one works in the Chrome browser. Can you give us a little bit more detail about how exactly Google goes about sending links through sound?
Sure. So essentially, you install this Chrome extension, and through a series of beeps and boops that are interpreted by your laptops, provided that the other laptop has the extension installed, then you can send links, whether it's whatever you want to troll your coworkers with, or potentially documents, files, what have you. And it doesn't work perfectly, but it works, and it's pretty cool.
Interesting. So it's just beeps and boops. Can you have it play like YouTube music or any other kinds of sounds?
No, it's just the way it's designed is effectively you're using it to send out your computer's voice. That's the way Google described it. So it's effectively your computer speaking to another computer, or it might be speaking to a number of computers in the room. And it's sending that link out just by audio, and it'll interpret it and you'll go straight to the link.
Now, I'm going to do a little example here. Here's the sound for the Tech News Today page. I'm just going to move my microphone here.
Right.
So this is really cool for those of us who have shows, because what it means is that we can send links as part of the audio, theoretically. Now, you pointed out that I believe that you tried it and it didn't work that well or didn't work all the time. What were some of the problems you had with it?
So a coworker of mine were testing it at our desks, and it worked a handful of times, but it wasn't able to transmit YouTube links, and it wasn't able to transmit every link that we tried. And that might just be a part of the extension being experimental at this point, but when it did work, it was kind of cool. So what we usually do, we have a specific like Rickrolling kind of derivative at the office, and that went through, and it was fun, but apart from having Slack, it's kind of like, why would you use this if you have instant messaging?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Who do you think is actually going to be able to use this feature? Like, who does it benefit most?
Google wants you to believe that it'll be families and potentially classrooms. So if all the students have the app installed on their computers, the teacher can send out the audio of the file or the link that they want to share, and everyone will get it at the same time, which is an interesting idea.
The other group of people that will use this, of course, is spammers who can just send out a sound and have anybody who's got the Chrome browser open and has this extension installed will suddenly get the web page of their choice. So hopefully they'll do something to protect us from that. Kwame Opem is at TheVerge.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Kwame Opem. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kwame.
Thank you.
All right. MasterCard unveiled yesterday a new payment system for money transfers. It's called MasterCard Send. The main benefit is speed. The company claims that sending money takes about as much time as it takes to withdraw money from an ATM. We asked Mobile Payments Today editor Will Hernandez to come on the show today and explain what the heck this is all about. Welcome to you, Will.
Hey, Mike. How's everything going?
It's going great, thanks. Now, can you talk about what's different about MasterCard Send? Of course, people are sending money all over the place. What are they doing differently?
So the difference here is that instead of using the ACH system that we generally see to transfer money, and that process takes between 1 to 3 days for somebody to receive the funds, what MasterCard is doing is they're using the debit networks that are already in place. So they can basically you know, swipe your debit card at a station, a travel agency or a insurance agency, I should say, can swipe your debit card at a mobile POS station. And the idea is that you'll be able to get the funds in about, like you said, about the time it takes to do an ATM transaction and maybe as much as 30 minutes. But again, versus an ACH transfer, ACH takes between 1 to 3 days. The debit networks can get that money to you as quickly as possible.
And how is this different from using something like Venmo or PayPal? Is it the fact that it's an actual card swipe that's happening versus just a pure mobile payment?
In some ways, it's going to be a card swipe. I think the idea right now is at some point, you're going to have financial institutions being able to offer this MasterCard Send piece within a mobile banking app. And I think the idea there is, you know, some consumer surveys have showed that people are more comfortable sharing their financial information with their banks as opposed to Venmo. And as you know, Venmo has had some problems in the past, you know, with safety precautions. So I think the idea there is to kind of leapfrog Venmo in some ways and kind of be a trust factor as well as a speech factor. I mean, you can use Venmo and link a card. But again, the security concerns that some people may have about that comes into play. And I think MasterCard are going to try to use their brand and their relationship with the banks to kind of leapfrog that and try to be a major player in the space.
Now, I understand that this is already in place. It's already available. But with MasterCard's early partners, who are the partners that are in place right now?
Well, we have a Berkshire Travel Insurance, and they do They basically do travel insurance. So if you lose your luggage and you need to be reimbursed, they can send you the funds that way. And there's also a outlet called FreeShipping.com, which basically it's, you know, you can they send you deals and rebates and things of that nature. So you can imagine instead of getting a check in 7 days, this website will be able to send you the money in a matter of, again, minutes to a half an hour. So that, those are their two initial partners right now.
And is this something that we're going to be able to use for person-to-person payments, or is it mostly institutions and businesses?
It will eventually come to person-to-person. I think that's kind of, they wanted to start off slowly with the business-to-consumer outlet first and try to get that going. And I think once the banks kind of come on board with this, because don't forget, when you look at like the landscape now for person-to-person payments, a lot of the fintech companies like a Venmo, like a Facebook, have kind of gone out there and gotten ahead of the banks. So this is going to give them a way to kind of play catch up in some ways. And I don't think it's a thing that they're coming to the party late. I think they're coming to the party just in time because this market is so big that they're going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of room for multiple players in the market to take advantage of person-to-person payments. So we're going to see it coming pretty soon.
I think you're right, and I think the market will appreciate it because I think a lot of people do complain about the time it takes for payments to be transferred presently in almost every situation that you mentioned. Will Hernandez is at mobilepaymentstoday.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at W_Hernandez16. Thanks for joining us today, Will.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. A European company called Altice just agreed to buy 70% of a U.S. company called Suddenlink. David Lieberman is executive editor of Deadline and joins us now to explain what's going on here. Welcome, David.
Good to be here.
Now, first of all, what is Altice? And for that matter, what is Suddenlink?
Sure. Altice is a holding company. It's based in Luxembourg. It's controlled by a billionaire named Patrick Dahi. And what they've done is they've bought 70% of Suddenlink, which is the seventh largest cable company in the United States.
How many? So how big is that? How many subscribers does Suddenlink
have?
They've
got about 1.5 million subscribers, most of them in Texas, but also a lot in Louisiana, West Virginia, Arkansas, Arizona.
Now, to me, the part that's interesting about this is not the actual deal, but it's about this Patrick Drahi character. He's really interested in U.S. acquisitions, isn't he? And he's sort of pitting himself or seems to be intending to become the major player in this market within the United States. Can you talk a little bit about what people think his intentions are?
Sure. He wants to grow. He's been growing for the last decade or so. He created the company about 2002, and he's been buying up systems in France and Belgium and Switzerland, Luxembourg, the French Caribbean. He's a big player in the Dominican Republic. And this is his first foothold in the United States, but he really sees this as a growing business. He likes to engage in what they call leveraged buyouts. He borrows a lot of money, then tries to get as much cash out of the business to pay for the interest, and then just keeps on going. And there's some talk that he's interested in Time Warner Cable as well.
Interesting. So how big of a deal is this? Is this an important move?
It could be huge. If he buys Time Warner Cable, that's the second largest cable company in the United States. Remember that it had a deal with Comcast that fell apart recently. But it would give him Manhattan as a cable systems here, a lot of systems in Los Angeles. You'd really make him overnight one of the biggest players in American media.
Is he likely to also become a major player in providing home internet access in the United States?
Well, sure. These cable companies are the dominant provider of broadband. So, absolutely, he'd be huge.
All right. Wonderful. David Lieberman is at Deadline.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at DeadlineDavidL. Thanks for joining us today, David.
My pleasure.
All right. We told you that Google was working on a deal with Twitter to get tweets back into search results. Well, now it's happening. The feature is available only in English and on desktops. For those who speak English and use desktops, this is pretty great news. Christina, what do you think about this? I mean, I remember when Google had, what did they call it, real-time search results? That was great. Then they had a falling out, and then that went away, and now it's back. And I think this is great, but do you think this is really going to drive more traffic to Twitter?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll drive more traffic to Twitter, but I know it's definitely a resource that I'll use because search on Twitter just isn't very good. And when you try to Google a specific tweet in the past, that's been really difficult. So this partnership seems like it'll be a really good way to surface historically relevant tweets to a topic that you're researching or to find experts on a particular topic. So I'm excited to, start using that more.
Yeah, me too. And, the other thing is that you don't necessarily know that the answer that you're looking for is on Twitter. You don't know where it is, so it's great to be able to search and have Twitter included in that result because it very well may be on Twitter. So, this is all good, I think, for those of us who like to search Google and want to look for information on Twitter, which, again, Twitter is a fantastic repository of information. Well, Google plans to roll out at next week's Google I.O. Developers Conference an online picture sharing and storage service that's similar to the one inside Google Plus, according to an exclusive at Bloomberg News. The service will enable users to upload to Facebook and Twitter as easily as they now can on Google Plus. I don't know if you use the Google Plus photo tools, Christina, but I do, and I love them. They're really great, and I think this is great that this is being separated from Google Plus. A lot of people don't want to use Google Plus, but they definitely are going to want to use these photo tools. They're just great. They're the best photo tools, at least cloud-based photo tools that I'm aware of, and so I think this is really great news.
Yeah, definitely. Google's photo platform, which is actually based on Picasa, is really great. But I think the fact that it's rolled into Google Plus has prevented a lot of people from adopting it. So I think breaking that out is going to make it much more widely adopted and easier to use. And then, just acknowledging that, people aren't quite as drawn to Google Plus as a platform as they are to Facebook and Twitter, and making it easier for people to get their photos from Google Plus or whatever this new photo platform is going to be called, and getting it onto other social media sites is going to just make it a huge draw for Android users and, people that use Google services.
The long shot name for it is Picasa. I don't think they would call it Picasa. All right. In product update news, Android Wear has been updated with better Google Maps support. Users need only to update the Google Maps app on Android to version 9.9 to get the update. It offers phone-like functions like pinch to zoom and swipe to navigate. Take that, Apple Watch. And launch with the OK Google voice command. Very cool. It looks really great. Christina, do you use Android Wear or the Apple Watch?
I do have an Apple Watch, and I've used Android Wear in the past, and I'm excited to get to check that out, hands-on. Maps and getting turn-by-turn directions on your wrist seems like a really useful application of wearables and smartwatches, and so just having that experience be even easier to use is really important, and just more more of a reason to grab a smartwatch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you're a bicycle enthusiast, aren't you? Do you use your Apple Watch for navigation on the bike?
You know, I actually haven't used it for navigation on the bike. I generally kind of know where I'm going these days, you know, around my neighborhood, around San Francisco and the Bay Area. So I don't typically need turn-by-turn directions on there. But it would definitely be handy if I was, like, in a city that I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah. Anyway, I really like the navigation feature on both of these watches. I think it's one of the best reasons to have a smartwatch in the first place. Well, the first update for the Apple Watch also hit yesterday. The update fixes bugs, boosts performance, which it sorely needed, and adds emoji display support. I don't know how important that is. You get it by using the software update option inside the Apple Watch iPhone app. The way this works, Christina, if you haven't done it yet, is it's just like the settings app on the iPhone. It's like the watch has its own like settings app. So you go in there, you go into general, you go into updates, and then you'll see, you know, the option to update the OS. And I did it yesterday. It took about half an hour. They want to make sure your watch is plugged in and so on. But it's good that they finally updated this. And the app performance does seem a little faster.
Nice. And I'm excited about the emoji support because that's a very important part of my messaging experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Not me. I just, you know, I like the idea, but I just never remember to do it. I send most of the messages using the canned messages on the watch anyway. So it's like emojis. They need to add emojis in there. Or maybe you can. I don't know. I have to check that out. Well, Oculus invited the press to an announcement of some kind on June 11th in San Francisco. The event will probably reveal more information about the Oculus Rift headset and possibly some kind of new trial or beta program. The headset is known to be planned for a shipment in the first half of next year. But, you know, the more information, the better. This thing, Christina, has been in the works for a long, long, long time, and we've been kind of waiting for it from its Kickstarter phase through its Facebook acquisition phase. And now finally we have hopefully a ship date that's going to be essentially in a year or so. But now they're going to have a big event, and hopefully they'll hand them out to the press so we can have more information about it.
Yeah, that's exciting. I haven't personally gotten to try the Oculus Rift, but I've tried the HTC Vive and Microsoft's VR headset, and it's really interesting. And I'm excited to see what developers do with it, what sort of applications they come up with beyond just gaming, which is exciting in itself. But doing like hands-on activities, I feel like learning how to, if you were like fixing a car or something, having that 3D representation of what you need to do in front of you could be, very interesting for people to use.
Yeah. I also am curious as to whether or not they will also announce a different product besides Rift. They have a partnership with Samsung that uses Oculus technology that's used with Samsung phones. And of course, Google has Google Cardboard and their other phone-related virtual and augmented reality products. I would love to see them have an official Oculus smartphone-based, low-cost, augmented reality tool of some kind or goggles. I think that would make a lot of sense, and I really think that's where the market is going to go. I think the really expensive, full virtual reality version that they've been working on for these many years is not going to be a mainstream product because there'll be so many low-cost augmented reality systems that based on the phone you already have. So hopefully they'll announce something like that. Well, in mergers and acquisitions news, Facebook has acquired a Patreon-like startup called Tugboat Yards, which makes a tool that podcasters, publishers, and others can use to take contributions from fans. Facebook will shut the service down, and the terms weren't disclosed. I always hate it when companies buy a company and then shut it down. They have existing customers, and you know, it's nice when companies buy another company in order to fund it better and to really support it and turn it into a monster. This, I guess, would be an acquihire of some kind because this service is going to be no more.
Yeah. I think that Facebook wants to make it easier for people to be able to say, like, donate to causes like Nepal, the Nepal earthquake that happened recently. How it had a pop up at the beginning of your Facebook feed that let you donate through Facebook's platform. And I think that they probably want to make things make it easier for their users to make payments like that. And perhaps this acquisition will make that even easier to happen. But it's kind of, it's a shame that they shut down the original service in the process of that.
Yeah, it is a shame. Well, we got a big number for you today, $182 billion. That's how many dollars the Chinese government says they're going to spend to improve internet speeds inside China by the end of 2017. The money will be spent on fiber optic broadband and high-speed 4G mobile networks. China is currently ranked, are you ready for this, 82nd in global average connection speeds, according to Akamai's recent State of the Internet report. My guess is that on the east coast of China or in the eastern part of China, speeds are probably very high in places like Beijing and Shanghai. But the rest of the country out in the sticks is probably very, very slow. So hopefully they're going to build that out so that the nation of China become more, you know, essentially why they're doing this is they see their economy becoming more of a service-related economy. And, of course, if that's going to happen, you're going to need faster internet speeds than they currently have. Well, in news, you can use Adblock Plus today, launched the beta version of an Adblock browser for Android. It's based on Firefox for Android, and it's got Adblock Plus baked right in. The main benefit, according to the company, is that it makes ad blocking on mobile as easy and powerful as it is on desktop browsers. You know, we had a big conversation recently on Twitter, not you and I, Christina, but me and a couple of other people about the ethics of advertising and the ethics of blocking ads. And there was a conversation about whether or not blocking ads is immoral, in the words of one writer. I tend to think that it's not immoral, but it's but I'm a huge fan of advertiser supported services. What do you think about ad blocking? Is this something people shouldn't do or should do?
You know, I don't usually use an ad blocker myself. I'm not sure why. I've definitely used one in the past. I feel, you know, the immoral part, that's a really interesting take. But I feel like in the mobile world, you've got like two kinds of apps. You've got ad-supported free apps, and then you have apps that you pay for. And you pay a premium for them because the experience is better because you don't have to deal with ads. And I think it's perfectly fine to... you know, if you have a single app that doesn't offer that premium experience that you can pay for to remove the ads, to use an ad blocker to block those ads, you know, that's, you know, they're bad, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, my own take, I've talked about this on a couple of Twitch shows before and I've written about it, is that, you know, we live in a global world where there are vast differences in the ability for people to pay for things. There are places, you know, like in Cuba, for example, where, you know, if you can get an internet connection there, you know, the average salary is like $25 a month. And so if you charge $5 for a service per month, then you know, that's more than half the world just isn't ever going to pay for that. And so you end up with an elite sort of situation. It's fine with certain types of apps, right? But thank goodness things like Google Search is ad-supported. Essentially how that works is that people who use the advertisement, respond to the ads on Google Search, pay the advertisers, which incentivizes them to buy ads, which funds the salaries and all the rest, the infrastructure for Google to provide Google Search. And then people who live in extremely poor countries can use Google Search for free because it's ad supported. It's a transfer of wealth between wealthy people to people who are less wealthy. And for that reason, I think it's really important for certain types of things. And I think people tend to think, oh, these advertisers, they're just spamming me. They're trying to get, you know, but, you know, it's actually a really great thing. And I think it's superior in a lot of ways in terms of a public good for people who can't afford to, you know, pay for subscriptions. But that's my own soapbox of the day there. I think it's a good thing that advertisement supported services exist. That's my two cents. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Dave Abston in Sebastopol, California. That's like walking distance from here, who posted this picture on Google Plus. He watches Tech News Today with his cat, Oski. There's the cat. The cat seems very impressed. And, of course, that's he says that his cat is requesting more cat-related content from us. So we'll take that under advisement. You know, around here, I think that might actually fly. We've got a lot of cat fans around here. Well, show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Christina Bonington, tell us more about the company that you write for, Refinery29. What is Refinery29 exactly?
Yeah, so Refinery29 is... a woman's lifestyle destination online. And it's really cool. It started out as kind of a style and fashion site, and we're just really about, you know, empowering our readers to live a stylish and creative life. And now that, you know, a smartphone is on you all the time, you know, technology is just an integrated part of our life experience and not something, you know, you go into a computer room and compute. It's with you all the time. I was brought on board about a month ago, and I'm heading up our tech coverage. And yeah, so just sharing, you know, the big news of the day, sharing major trends, the intersection of kind of fashion and style and technology, and highlighting women that are doing cool things in the tech world and in STEM fields. And yeah, and also highlighting that the issues that they deal with on a daily basis.
It's pretty interesting for a journalist. I mean, you went from a publication, Wired, where it's all nerds, all geeks, all the time, to Refinery 29, where you're the resident nerd, right? I mean, you're the big tech person. They probably do people come to you for tech support as well?
You know, not quite as much as I would have expected. I think a lot of people are fairly tech savvy. And I think, you know, the difference in the audience at Refinery 29 versus someplace like Wired is that the people are still interested in learning about tech and may know a fair bit about it, but they don't think of themselves as a nerd or a techie. You know, they have a smartphone. It's something they use all the time, but they don't think of themselves as, you know, heading to Wired or The Verge for news every day. But now, you know, we can give them that information to help them live their lives easier and use technology to make everything, you know, more efficient and more fun.
It definitely does that. You can find Christina Bonnington on Twitter at Red Girl Says. Thank you so much for joining us today, Christina.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
All right, take care. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Spotify. Or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv. And follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV and join our Google Plus community. Just for search Google Plus for Tech News Today. You can follow me personally on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/Mike.Elgin. And don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. The show was produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.